Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Guy Needler. Along with his healing abilities and his spiritual associations, he is able to channel information from spirit, including constant contact with other entities within our multiverse and his higher self and guides. And it is his channeling that has resulted in his book, The History of God, and it's also producing further work. So welcome to the program, Guy.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, Mike. It's a great pleasure to be here.
Well, having not actually read your book, but read about it, it sounds extremely interesting, to say the least. And you've done something, I guess, that few people do, which is to have contact with the source. But first, tell us how you came to find your spiritual path and get into your spiritual work.
Well, I'll take you quite from the start, actually.
Yes.
I've always been involved in spiritual things, but from a very, very early age, I've been able to, if you like, see the world of spirit at the corner of my eye. I've had a deep interest in things of the spirit. And in my sort of early teenage years, I spent a lot of time meditating and reading the spiritual texts of the day. And I got really quite deeply involved in meditation. And I did a lot of things like astral travelling, spent a lot of time trying to bring things back that had form, if you want to call it that, from the worlds of spirit and bring them back into the world of sort of physical form. And failed, of course, miserably, as we do, because it's a different frequency range. And so I have to quickly apologise for my voice. I've got a bit of a cold, so if I sound a bit muffled, that's the reason. And in effect, I did this for quite a long time, and then one morning I was doing a morning meditation, and my guides suddenly appeared before me, and there was four of these guides, all in white robes, and all smiling so benevolently and so beautifully, and filled me full of love, that I was quite engrossed in this love. But they gave me quite an important message, and they told me that what I was doing was right, what I was researching into was right, but it wasn't the right time for me. I needed to get some more earthly experience first. So, in effect, from that day onwards, which was my late teens, early 20s, I sort of put spiritual things in the back burner, although I did keep one eye open on it. And then really about 10 to 12 years ago, a friend of mine who was always at college with, I was doing some secondary education to go get a master's degree in business administration. And she said, "Oh, we're going to a Reiki class. You interested?" And I thought, I might go to this. So I went to it. 18 months later, I ended up being a Reiki master. And during that time, I was introduced to another lady who was doing some energy healing for me. And she was a first-generation student of Barbara Brennan. And she invited me along to do one of her workshops, which ended up being a four-year commitment at the end of the day to be taught all the healing techniques, all the energy healing techniques that she was taught through going to the Brennan Hall of School of Healing Science over in the US. And I learned an awful lot on those 4 years. There was an awful lot of psychotherapy, an awful lot of understanding how to work with different energies. And one of the things we had to do is rise up and down the frequencies to affect healing on different auric layers and the different aspects of the chakras that to manifest on those different auric layers. And it was during this that I found that I could move well above those frequency levels associated with the human energy field. And although I got reprimanded quite severely a number of times by my teacher for not staying grounding, once I finished the course, I decided to progress that personal research further. And I eventually found out I could go much, much higher than those seven frequency levels associated with the human energy field, and literally went past those frequencies associated with our physical universe. And on my journey upwards, I met other entities, and eventually I got to the point where I was communicating with that entity that although it didn't introduce itself as such first, later did in fact introduce itself as our source entity, or that entity we call God.
Mm. So, how many years ago was all this taking place?
Well, I started to I started the course with Helen Stutt, who was the one of the first generation students of Barbara Brennan, back in 2001. Mm. And I started to journal the information that I got as a result of the meditations, and therefore the work I was doing moving up and down the frequencies, from about 2004 onwards. And it took about 4 years to get the information together, 4 or 5 years to get the information together, to get the text that is now called The History of God, which is published by Azar.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, it was, I've moved on, you know, quite a lot since then, basically. But initially, you know, it must have been about 4 or 5 years, in terms, you know, journaling all that information together and correlating it into subject matters that were consistently together enough to make it into a readable text.
Right. So would I be correct in assuming that you acquired this information through channeling?
Yes, I think channeling is probably the correct way to describe it now. Initially, I would have explained it as being meditation, but now I've got a permanent link with the entity we call the source entity, what we call God, and its creator, another entity that's identified itself as the origin, what the Hindu texts call, you know, the absolute, all that there is. I actually don't need to go into a meditative state anymore to get to that point. I've got a constant link with that, or certainly those two entities. And since I've completed the history of God, I've been channeling more information from the other source entities, or what we could call the co-creators, or the Elohim.
Right. So have you been able to sort of call this source up to make contact, or do you have to wait for contact to be made with you?
No, I can basically turn it on and off as I need to. It's quite profound, actually, in so much as I thought that I was talking to myself quite a lot. You know, you think, well, yeah, am I just talking to myself? But some of the information that was coming out was so different to me. The language wasn't my language, the accent wasn't my accent, if you want to call it that. Some of the information that came through that was of a predictory nature, if you want to call it that, premonitionary nature, was accurate beyond belief. And I started to realise that it wasn't me talking to myself, it was actually me talking to a higher entity who had access to and control of a much wider depth and breadth of knowledge and cosmic knowledge than I could ever have. There's been basically an incarnate entity on Earth in that instance.
Right. So a question that might come to many people's mind is, how do you convince yourself, if not other people, that you are actually talking to God, which I believe you also call the source, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
Right.
Yes, and initially, this entity didn't announce itself as as our God or the source entity. It took a period of about 18 months for me to start to talk to it, to talk to the full aspect of it, if you want to call it that. A smaller aspect of it was what it was allowing me to communicate with at first. But it's that's a very good question, you know, and it's one that I ask myself on a regular basis, because if we're not challenging that information that's given to us in terms of, A, are we talking to ourselves? B, is the information given to us robust in terms of its direction from spirit? C, is it actually from the source entity, or is it from some intermediary entity? Or D, is it a case of, well, I'm just picking up the cosmic knowledge and it's filtering through my brain in some way? And I ask questions on a regular regular basis. I'm constantly sort of saying to myself, am I, you know, being delusional, or am I doing the wrong thing? But every now and then I'll pick up a text, and I don't like reading texts these days, Michael, because I'm fearful of being contaminated subconsciously by somebody else's work. You know, it's quite possible that work could be regurgitated, my own work. And so, you know, I leave things alone, but I have them for a long, long time now. But on the other occasion, I do pick up a text and I happen to flick through to a certain page. It's quite interesting, because that page will literally confirm from a different direction that information that I've picked up literally half an hour ago or an hour ago. But this text is like over 100 years old, because I've got bits and pieces of old spiritual texts from yogis that have written texts that are 120 years old in my bookshelves, and I've never read them. I've got them there, but I've never read them. Right. But on the other occasion, I do pick them up and just thought, oh, I'll just flick through. I invariably come to a page and think, well, that's amazing, because that information is what I've just picked up, and this guy wrote this down 100 years ago. it's quite amazing.
Right. Now, I understand in your book you talk of the origin, which is the creator, if I understand you correctly, was the end, and everything was taking place within the origin. Yeah, can you explain that a little bit further?
Yes, the origin the origin is everything, all that there is. It's the absolute. If we consider that everything that there possibly is a vast tract of space that is, we just can't get a grip of how big this space would be. It's right. Just far too big for us to comprehend. If we think this vast tract of space is energy based, because everything is energy, and that some part of that vast tract of space, in the dim and distant past, now there is no such thing as time, as most spiritualists understand. But this, let's just say it's a long, long time ago. Some part of that energy reached a critical mass where it was able to start to become self-aware and therefore gain some level of sentience. And in that level of sentience and self-awareness, it started to experiment with what it was. It started to look at itself and understand itself and trying to work out what it was. And in doing so, it realised that there was more to itself than just that little bit that it was looking at. And I've since understood that it doesn't even know, it hasn't even mapped the minutest fraction of 1% of itself, by the way, which is quite an awesome piece of information in its own right. But as it started to map out and understand and venture into and journey into those dimensions and zones and frequencies and event spaces and all the other sorts of structural energies that created, it started to realise that it just was going to take far too long for it to start to experience that which it had experienced in its first few journeys into itself. What it experienced was evolution, basically. So it decided to create 12 equal entities to itself, but place them outside of its sphere of self-awareness, that area that it had mapped or knew existed, and it put them outside of itself, outside of the area of self that it had mapped, to give them the same criteria, the same opportunities that it had had when it first became aware. And for whatever reason, that failed. None of them came out the other side and became an individual sentient entity like it was. So it gathered that energy back up again and decided a new strategy. And what it did later on was create these 12 source entities within the sphere of its own self-awareness. So they had, if you like, they were given purpose by the origin. They were told to go out there and experience that part of the origin that they were existing within, to learn from those experiences and to evolve as a result of that, and then pass that evolution back to the origin, so it could evolve at a multiple rate of that which it would have achieved on its own. But the source entities themselves wouldn't lose that evolutionary content. They would continue to evolve in their own right as well. And each of them was also advised that they could do whatever they wanted to do to experience, learn and evolve and accelerate their own evolution. And many of them did achieve this in various different ways by creating their own environments or multiverses or universes or just space, whichever way they wanted to do it, and populate it, if they wanted to, with smaller entities, of which our source entity created billions upon trillions of smaller individualized units of itself to experience the minute detail of that environment that was itself, but was also ultimately a minute part of that which was that currently mapped out area of the origin. So we basically, our job is to, as part of the source entity, therefore part of the origin, is to go and experience the minute detail of the environment that we exist within. So that's a very short history of the origin, which, as it happens, Michael, is going to be the subject of a new book I'm going to be starting about September, which will be called The Origin Speaks.
Right.
Which, it's going to take quite some time, I believe, for us all being told, but there we go. That's the...
So, were the 12, the other 12 source entities, gods in their own rights?
Yeah, if you want to call them gods, I think that's then we can use that nomenclature. Yes, they are. Mm. They're equal to each other, and I like to use the word co-creator. Although the word co-creator, from a human perspective, is considered to be that which is below God, actually. My understanding is not quite the same. The co-creators are those that were created by the origin. And each of them is a source entity in its own right, and they've all created their own multiverses and have populated it, or not as the case may be, with smaller entities to experience the minute detail. So, yes, you would, if you wanted to use the word God for our source entity, yes, then that is one way of describing it. And if you wanted to do, extend that description to the other entities that were created as the peers of our God, then yes, you would call them the other gods or the co-creators. Or in fact, if you wanted to use a piece of religious terminology, you could call them the Elohim as well.
Yes, right. So they were given total freedom to create as they wished. So does that mean that the God, if I can still use that word, of our universe, is one of those entities?
Yes. our God is one of the 12. And I call it Source Entity 1 in the book that's about to be released called Beyond the Source, and which is going to be followed by a second book which copes with the rest of that that work, talking to those other co-creators. But Yeah, absolutely, yes. It is one of those, one of those 12, one of those gods. It has got total free will to go out there and do anything it needs to do, to create anything it needs to create, even to destroy that which it needs to destroy, to enable it to experience, learn and evolve in any way, shape and form it can do. There is no rules. It just goes out there. It's been told to go out there and do it. And then bring back what it learns, basically. And that's the same with the other source entities as well. Their remit is just to go out there and experience and learn from those experiences and evolve as the case may be as a result of it.
Right. Very so simple. The millions of pieces, I don't know what word to use, that represent the God of the universe means that we are, in fact, part of God. Is that correct? Of that God?
Yes, absolutely. We are individualized, smaller units of that energy that is our God, definitely. Mm. There's no question about that. We're all, if you want to take it one step higher, we're all God. And that is quite clear in the communications I've had, both with our own source entity, our own God, and those other source entities or gods that I've communicated with in the interim periods between the History of God book and the Beyond the Source book one and the book two, which I'm just finalising as we speak.
Right. So I think the spiritual teachings lead us to understand that we are on the path back to our source. Do you agree with that, that we're all on this path back to that source?
Yes, that's interesting because I wasn't specifically aware of that when I started to channel this information. I suppose one of the beauties of being in my own position is that my own spiritual teaching has been, if you like, blinkered in some way, so that I've not received some of those more esoteric methodologies of understanding where we're going from, where we're coming from, where we're going to. So I've been allowed to understand the information that I've got as a result of my channeling, and later correlated with that information that's coming from elsewhere, and then realised that that is in fact the truth, because it correlates entirely. It's done in isolation, and it correlates, you know, in its entirety. And one of those levels of correlation is that we are in fact, we've been thrown in at the lowest frequencies, and our evolutionary path is to rise through the frequencies. And as we rise through the frequencies, we get closer and closer to those frequencies associated with the pureness, if you want to call it that, of frequency, which is the center point and the entry point to which we would gain total communion with our creator, our source entity. So we would... the way we do that is to experience, to learn and evolve. Once we've gone through all of the different frequencies that are associated with the different subdimensional components, and therefore the four dimensions that are right, and we come back to the source, then we have a choice. We can either totally, utterly integrate back with the source, and if we want to lose our individuality, we can do, or we can integrate and commune with the source and maintain our individuality, and therefore become part of a coordinated unit, you know, a sort of meta concert, if you want to call it that, with the source entity. Or right. We can feed that information back, commune with the source, and we can go out there and try to experience things in a completely different way this time, but again, if you want to call it that, have another go at doing this and see what we can find out that we missed last time.
Right. So I know for humans, words are sometimes difficult to find to describe what is, but what you've just spoken about, I think, has often been described as the breathing in and breathing out from the source. So that sounds very much in line with what you've said.
Yes, it would be quite a good piece of correlation, I think, in terms of understanding my own work versus the work of others. And in fact, sometimes a lot of the information we get, Michael, for the past, certainly past information, has had to be more general in its application. So the term breathing in and breathing out could also include the creation of new universes and the destruction of those older universes so that we can start again. My sort of understanding is that we don't actually although the source entity could in fact withdraw the structure of the multiverse and create a new multiverse, should it so wish, that it hasn't got the inclination to do that, and doesn't have the inclination to do that because of the level of success that it is enjoying with the current configuration. The breathing out and breathing inwards, therefore, is the, if you like, the as we just said, the spirits going out there, experiencing, learning, and evolving, bringing that evolutionary content back, and then they seek communion, they stay with the source, or they decide to go and do it again, but in a different way. Or they may want to, and this hasn't been confirmed yet, they may want to change from one source entity to another source entity, although my knowledge to date suggests that that has never happened yet.
It's quite a mind-boggling concept, and I suppose to be truthful, as you hinted at, I think, a little earlier, we do not really have the level of understanding to really comprehend all of this, but it's very interesting to get some insight into it. So is this universe or multiverse in any way connected with the other ones, or are we like experiencing in our own rights and without any interference or connection with the other ones?
Yeah. Each of the source entities has the ability to create their own multiverse within their own sphere of, or body of themselves, if you want to call it that. So there's no connectivity between them other than their own communications between each other. There is a level of correlation between the energies used in each of the different multiverses purely because they were created by the Origin, and therefore they're having to use that which is the Origin to create what they're creating. So there is a level of, if you like, the same tools in the toolbox being used to some extent and purposes in terms of creating a multiverse or a universe or just specifically an environment. But there is no interference between any of them in terms of, you know, whatever Source Entity 1 does doesn't get interfered by what Source Entity 4 does, for instance. Certainly with our own Source Entity, did try to model the structure of its multiverse upon that which was the structure of the Origin to a certain extent. And if I might take the time, Michael, I'd just like to explain the structure of our God's multiverse, because there's a lot of information that we've had in the past that, as you've just said, about the level of information we've got and the level of detail we've got, is basically we're given information which we can cope with at that point in time. And there's a lot of it talk about the ascension going to the fifth dimension, but we miss out the fourth dimension. But we know the fourth dimension is time, with current popular terminology, but time doesn't exist. We also know that. So how can we go from the third dimension to the fifth dimension if the fourth dimension doesn't exist? So we start to see that there's an awful lot of stuff that we thought was right spiritually, which we're starting to find has now got holes in it. And that's specifically because at a certain point of our evolution, we wouldn't have been able to understand the full truth of the matter. And I've started to get information where I'm actually starting to get more and more clearer information the longer and longer I started to discuss information with these different source entities. So even my information is evolving, as you know, on a yearly basis, let alone a, you know, decade basis. But getting down to the nitty-gritty of our source entities universe, sorry, multiverse, it created a multiverse based upon 12, because this 12 number is quite a commonly used number, because it's based upon the way that the structure of the Origin is. So it created a multiverse based upon 12 full dimensions. Each full dimension is created or structured with 3 subdimensional components. Each subdimensional component is inflated with 12 frequency bands. Each frequency band is capable of supporting a whole universe in its own right. So that would mean, if we look at it from a physical perspective, all of the frequencies that are out there that we can either detect now with our machinery or could detect later is that which is contained within this frequency band. The only difference is that because we are where we are, our frequencies are so dense that we're right at the bottom of the pile. So we're not actually in the third dimension, we're in the first full dimension. And the first full dimension doesn't obey the same rules as the second, third, fourth, onwards up to the 12th, as I've just described, where each of those full dimensions is constructed of 3 subdimensional components, which is therefore each of those subdimensional components is inflated by 12 frequency bands. Because we have to start somewhere, there has to be a foundation. So on the first full dimension, the 3 subdimensional components are actually sort of welded together to create that first full dimension, which means that they equal 1 rather than 3. So the 12 frequency bands that would have been associated with each of those subdimensional components, that would have been 36 frequency bands within a full dimension, actually only equals 12. And by the way, that 12 frequency bands again are welded together to create a universe which is in the lowest frequencies possible, which is where we are now. So we exist within a group of 12 frequency bands, of which the human body occupies or exists within 10 of those. And then once we go beyond that, we go to the 13th frequency band. We then move into the next frequency band, or the next simultaneous universe, which is the first frequency band of the first dimensional subcomponent of the second full dimension. So that's quite a difficult mouthful to get one's head around sometimes. But but it's when I look at it and understand it with greater detail, I start to realise that the truth behind it, because there's a lot more detail behind it as more and more I become involved with the different source entities, because there's all sorts of things like event space as well, which is, if you like that includes parallel universes, because the base frequencies create simultaneous universes, and they're a completely different thing to a parallel universe. So there's a whole lot of stuff out there which is nested together that I'm only just starting to unravel. And to be honest, that starts to give me a headache a lot of the time. So, yeah.
Well, I think it reaches a point where you wonder if you're perhaps aiming too high, and you ought to perhaps be more concerned with matters that you can understand that affect you at this time. Now, you said our universe is the lowest frequency. What do you know about this year and the teachings that have coming about that are suggesting that the whole universe is rising in frequency?
Well, I've actually asked that question of our source entity, because there's an awful lot of popular prediction about the ascension of the Earth, the ascension, how the Earth's going to affect the ascension of the universe, because it will affect the universe, because the base frequency gets affected if one area does. And the information I've received tells me that we are ascending, but in a slow and robust manner. We won't be going through a sudden knife edge change where we suddenly evolve and become part of a different frequency base or dimension, because that would be too quick and wouldn't be sustainable, because we could quite easily slip backwards and jump back down that frequency level. So what's happening right now is that we are in fact evolving and ascending on a slow, robust, achievable and maintainable way. And the date that has been picked up by some mediums, channelers, psychics, etc., of the 21st of the 12th, 2012, is based upon a milestone where we will have achieved a certain level of ascension on that date. Rather than going through a knife edge change, we will have risen there slowly, and we are rising there slowly. But that slowness is actually accelerating, by the way, because we've moved, I've felt it myself, we've moved a long way in the last 5 years. We've moved more in 5 years than we've moved in the past previous 50 years, because of the critical mass of individuals becoming more aware or more interested in subjects of the spirit and becoming interested in it and participating in things, becoming part of self-healing groups, part of meetups, part of Reiki club, Reiki group healings, doing all of the, becoming part of meditation groups, all of these things all add towards the bulk frequency, increase the bulk frequency. The lack of tolerance these days of war and famine and all these sort of things is again a good example of the rising frequency, as is the increase in the introduction of new technology. Because as we get further and further the frequencies, the, if you like, that veil between where we are and the cosmic knowledge gets thinner, so therefore those individuals who are in tune with those areas, and they don't have to be in tune consciously, they can be in tune subconsciously as well. Start to pick up those pieces of information to allow them to, if you like, invent or progress that technology from one point to another point that would seem to be miraculous in some cases, but it's nevertheless a natural progression. And all these things are proof that we are ascending. And the dates involved are dates based upon milestones rather than a sudden knife-edge change. Because a sudden knife-edge change upwards can become a sudden knife-edge change backwards. So if we looked at, if we had a graph, we saw a graph of us moving upwards, and we looked at the fine detail of that graph, we would see we've got little jumps downwards, little jumps upwards, but the average movement is upwards without doubt, rather than great big movements like steps upwards or down as the case may be. So, yeah, we're moving upwards definitely, not in a knife-edge way, but in a robust, sustainable way that is going to accelerate in a geometric fashion once we start to come across that point in the curve where we're starting to get more and more triangulation happening.
Right. Would you expect that key point to be registered by us? In other words, would those that have a suitable vibration to accept the increase, would they be aware of it, do you think? Would it be something very special, although you're saying it, nevertheless it is a gentle sort of, although robust, move?
Well, I sort of liken it to the frog in the bucket, the frog in the frying pan, where the water's in the frying pan,
yeah,
and the water's being heated up slowly. The frog doesn't know it's being boiled eventually. So I don't think we will, only the very sensitive amongst us will start to realise there's big changes happening within themselves. So there will be people who will say, yes, I am more aware now than I was 12 months ago. There will undoubtedly be those individuals. And there will be those individuals who wouldn't have been interested in things of the spirit previously that will suddenly become interested in things of the spirit. And those will be the signs we'll see, rather than big things like we'll suddenly start to be able to levitate, that sort of stuff. Yeah, I don't see that happening in that level of profundity. What I can see is that there'll be more and more people becoming spiritual, there'll be more and more people becoming intuitive, there'll be more and more people being healers, getting involved with healing, becoming involved with things of the spirit. And more people will be moving away from the mundane side of the existence and starting to realise that there is more out there than just physical existence, basically. And that those will be the markers. And anybody who's got their eyes open, any spiritual individual who's got their eyes open, will start to see this happening around them. And certainly I can see it now. I can see changes happening on an almost daily basis. I can tell sometimes, for instance, sometimes people who are very fit and healthy will start to realise that they've got joint aches or body pains or, you know, they have difficulty with taking on board certain foods, or they suddenly realise that they can't take alcohol. Because all of these things are, some of these foods and alcohol, the lower frequency materials that we use to sort of fuel our human body. They will find that they can't cope with these sort of things. They'll have to have higher frequency foods like vegetarian sort of diets or soups and those sort of things. Right. And they'll be moving away from wheat, for instance, those lower frequency foods as well. So we'll start to see little things like these happening that will, again, be big pointers for those who are aware and are looking around for the milestones that are around us, basically.
I think that's already happening now. Now, a point that clearly is of interest to people is, bearing in mind we have free will, what about the people that at the moment would not appear to have any interest in ascending? Do you think that the incoming frequencies or energies will actually lift their consciousness up and they will change their mind? And if they don't, what will happen to them?
The depending upon their own evolutionary contents, they will either be pulled up through triangulation to a point where they, you know, just cross the barrier, as it were, or they will stay within a frequency that is consistent with their own condition, and they will stay there. What we will find is that those people around us, including people like ourselves who are aware of what's going on, will start to become more invisible to these people.
Right.
I've noticed this for a long time now within my own existence. And interestingly enough, I had a reading with a lady via Skype in Australia last week. And she was saying this: I find people just don't see me. They ignore me. I'm in a group of people and I say something, and it's like I've not spoken at all. Yeah. And then somebody else says something, and that's exactly the same thing, and they pay attention to them. And I said, yes, that's because you're a higher frequency, and you're not in their perceptual range. And it's only when you lose your temper or you get angry that you start to come down the frequencies, that you start to become in within their perceptual range, and they've, where have you come from? And this is what's going to happen. People who ascend will move up the frequencies, and although we will be able, well, say we, the people who ascend will be able to see those people in the lower frequencies, but not specifically below them. They'll be able to see them as they are now, just like we can see ice. We will also be able to see the water, for instance. We'll also be able to see the air that was previously the water. So we will be, we'll be like the water that was previously ice, that's become water, and has now become steam or air because of the high frequency content of that water.
Right.
So we'll still be in the same area, as it were, but we will become invisible to those who have stayed down the frequencies. Now, eventually, when there's a quite a huge critical mass, those individuals who remain of a lower frequency will eventually die out, is my understanding. And the rest of humanity will continue to proliferate and exist on the higher frequencies. And then at that point, the Earth will have been in the higher frequencies long enough to stay within the next dimension, as it were. And then that area that we're in now will be closed off, because it's done its job, and there'll be no need for anybody to come down to these lower frequencies anymore. So
what did you mean when you say that those of the lower frequency will die out? Did you literally mean that they will leave their physical body?
Yeah, they will die naturally.
So
it's not going to be a mass death, as it were. It'll be
right.
People will die through normal age-related things, you know, illnesses, accidents, but they won't come back. Yeah, they won't come back into the incarnate cycle. They'll stay away. So eventually the critical mass of individual on the Earth will be of the higher frequency base.
Right, yes.
Yeah. And we're starting to see those individuals who are of lower frequency being replaced by higher frequency people now. I mean, there's lots of talk about the indigo children, the crystal children, the rainbow children. And they're all part of the efforts to increase the base frequency or the critical mass of the population of the Earth to a point where it can't do anything else other than stay in the higher frequencies. Those higher frequencies will be abhorrent to those who can't metabolize those higher frequencies, so their bodies will naturally demise as the case may be as a result of it.
Right. Do you mean then that, say, for those souls that are of a low vibration and could be seen as being unable to increase their vibrational level, all of them at some stage between now and the end of the year would leave the Earth through natural means or otherwise?
Oh, no, I don't see it being that quick.
No? Right, okay.
No, I think it'll be over a period of a couple of generations, although we will start to see people leaving the planet, if you like, earlier than we'd have expected them to, for instance. People may well get cancers who you wouldn't have thought they'd get cancers. People will suddenly die of things like strokes and those sort of things who wouldn't have expected to. Or people will just, you know, live their normal lives and die normally. So there will need to be this running out of the normal sort of physical life cycle. So I would expect it to be within the next 50 to 75 years, because there are people who are of that lower frequency that are still only in their infant years, if you want to call it that. So I think it'll take some time. It'll probably be outside of my physical lifetime, but it'll certainly be happening, and we will start to see, without doubt, even in our physical lifetime, we will start to see a big shift in the thought process of the masses around the planet, away from the aggressive side of existence, more towards the harmony side, the loving side of existence, where we're all starting to help each other out and be of service to each other, rather than thinking that only of ourselves and how we can benefit ourselves rather than anybody else.
That will be a wonderful time. But I just want to pursue a point there. Now, you're saying that the people of the lower vibrations will disappear over a relatively long period of time. Now, if those with the higher level of vibration are going to ascend at some stage at the end of the year, 21st of the 12th, does that mean that those that are still here of the lower vibration will have to then move to another planet? I mean, where do they go if they don't go through with ascension?
Well, as I've said previously, we won't go through a knife edge ascension. We will reach a milestone where we have got to a certain level of frequency, as expected of that period that is currently being classified as the 12th of the 21st of the 12th, 2012. So there will still be, if we look around now and see everybody on Earth, we'll basically see all those people still. Although there will be people who have already transitioned and people who are operating on a higher frequency. Eventually, those who can't cope, they will be transferred to a different frequency, basically, where they can continue their physical incarnations. But that will only be once they've left this particular body. It's not going to happen in the physical, basically. It'll be something that's happening once they've come out of this particular incarnation, they're back in the energetic, and then they can go and incarnate in another area of this universe or a quarantined area where they can continue to work out their physical incarnation or physical life cycles before they can then move upwards themselves.
But Guy, but nevertheless, then I'm guessing here that since the source can have a part in whatever happens to us, could there not be a possibility that source would decree that a certain thing could happen at the end of the year that would, in effect, sort of hasten or speed up the transition of the people that weren't ready?
Absolutely. I mean, he hasn't advised me otherwise. obviously, I'm not high enough up the tree for that sort of communication process. But, to be honest, the source could do whatever it wanted to. In actual fact, it could completely end this multiverse right here and now if it so wished.
Right.
But I hope it doesn't, to be honest, because I've got plenty of things to do, yes. But, But yeah, if it felt the need to do something to provide some sort of extraordinary level of triangulation, where all of those individuals who are not capable of ascending on their own could do so as a result of taking on board some of the evolutionary content of those who have achieved a higher level. So if you like, they are they're part of a big worldwide triangulation effort, and that they are therefore just given enough evolutionary content to get them over the barrier, over the bar, as it were. Then, and the source entity decided to interfere in some way to do that because it was advantageous to do so. Then, yeah, it could do it. Yeah, there's no reason why it couldn't. It, absolutely not. It, I mean, it created a multiverse. There's no reason why it couldn't shift a few billion people on a low-frequency planet up from one level to another level. There'd be no problem with that for it. Except that it would like us to do it for ourselves.
To that particular subject, because it's very much, I think, on many people's minds, and it's interesting to know the potential future. I mean, there are lots of channels and different intuitive comments about what's going to happen. So I think your comments add to it, and that's very interesting. Now, we've got about 4 minutes left, Guy, and I would like you to tell people where they can obtain your book. You'd like to, no doubt, give your website address and any other information relative to that.
Yeah, sure. The book is called The History of God, subtitled The Story of the Beginning of Everything. It's available from the Ozark Mountain Publishing website. It's www.ozark, it's ozarkmt.com. Or it's available from Amazon, and there's any of the Amazons. It's amazon.com, amazon.co.uk, .de, .es, .it, all those places, including Barnes & Noble, Watkins, Waterstones, and W.H. Smith's, etc. But my own website is www.guystephenneedler.com. It's Stephen with a V. And on there, there's information about the history of God, The new book, which is about to be released in May, called Beyond the Source, where I'm in dialogue with the first six of the source entities or co-creators. And there's some teaser text as well for Beyond the Source book two as well, which I'm literally within 6 weeks of finishing for my calculations. So that should be submitted to Ozark for part of the Transformation Conference, which I'm going to in the States, by the way, in July.
Oh, you must be a busy man doing all that.
Yeah. Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, I enjoy it as well. So we've got a Transformation Conference in July in the US. We've got the Transformation Conference in the last weekend in August, right, first days of September in London.
Oh, right.
And we've got a New Earth cruise with Dolores Cannon and myself on the 5th of October. And All this information, along with workshops that I'm holding to help people, train people to do what I do, which is traverse the frequencies, they're all on the website, so people can go and look at that as well.
Brilliant, yes. Well, I'm sure we could have spent easily another hour mulling over some of the other aspects of your book. It's amazing to think, if I remember correctly, you've got a 500-page book. And we've dealt with it in 55 minutes.
Yes.
not really, of course. We've hardly scratched the surface. But, yes, it's a very interesting level of conversation, probably a little bit too heavy for some people. But we are open, I think, now to learning more, and you're giving it to people, which I think is wonderful. I have to say thank you very much for coming onto the programme, Guy, and I will look out for the information about your visit to London to see if I can somehow get to listen to what you're doing. So thank you very much for coming on to the programme.
Thank you very much for having me, Michael. And just very quickly to say to the listeners that the information that's coming out from myself and other people is again a result of the ascension.
Right.
So the deeper the detail, the higher up the frequencies we're going. So it's proof,
great,
basically.
Thank you very much, Guy.
Thank you, Michael. Brilliant. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Well, friends, I say it every week, yet another very interesting guest. Next week, my guest will be Pamela Leach. She's a seeker of wisdom, truth, joy and happiness. And it is her belief that we are here at this time to bring love, joy and happiness to the world. So... thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you very much.